The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Are you a financial advisor considering the independent RIA model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. They've helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is May 29th, 2025, 7:30 p.m. here in New York. It is bright and sunny at 7:30 p.m., which is nice, but it's actually like kind of funny because let me just fit in our weather talk right now. The weather here has been very hit or miss still, very gray and rainy a lot of times still. Still can be in like the high 40s, low 50s at night, which is pretty cold. But like today, rains all day, gray all day, 7 p.m. hits, there's the sun. It's out, beaming. I'm like, great, thank you. Where were you all day? This is what keeps happening.
It's crazy that you were saying the 40s and 50s because I've just looked it up and that is like our low is 52 and 53. So our nights are very similar still, even though we're nearly at winter. And everyone, I feel like it was so mild and moderate. Now all of a sudden it's really cold and everyone's whinging about the cold. So that's,
yeah. Like I said in the last episode, we had a week where it was like pretty hot, like too hot for this time of year. And all of a sudden it got very cold again, like too cold for this time of year. And as I've said, my furnace is broken. I don't feel like fixing it. And then it was finally getting a little nicer again. And we were having a friend come over for Memorial Day weekend. So we cleaned the whole house and everything. And I put the space heaters away because I was like, oh, we've got to be done with these by now. And I'm like, oh, I wish I still had the space heater. Should I go get it? It's a little chilly. But I have Peeps to keep me warm because, you know, she always has to lay literally across my face.
I think when we recorded last week, I was talking about how it was flooding and all that. So then that was Friday. Friday that we recorded. Saturday it was beautiful and sunny. And then it was like everyone's like, wow, we must be on the up again. And then on Monday it rained again. And I actually had a little laugh. Like, don't get me wrong, I know floods are awful and natural disasters are horrible. But on Facebook someone wrote, geez, it's good to see a bit of rain, isn't it? Because that's a really Aussie thing to say. Because like when I was growing up, it never rained. We had droughts for years and years. Like it was never raining. And just over the last probably 5 years, it rains all the time. So I just thought that was it. Like someone's like, geez, it's good to see a bit of rain. It was just
Yeah, I remember like years ago you had like the droughts and the wildfires. And then I feel like you had a year of a monsoon.
I can never remember. One is El Nino. There's no La Nina and El Nino. And anyway, one's rain, one's drought. So anyway, Hopefully like today is, it was a little bit gray yesterday. Today it's beautiful and sunny. So hopefully we're over the worst for a little while.
Yeah. As for me, my life update for the people who care, I'm like almost 28 weeks pregnant now. I'm over it still. Oh, okay, Peep. She's on the move. Over it still. I'm finally at the point, even though I've been saying I feel like I'm getting fatter, I'm just like, I'm so over it. I feel very large lately and I'm not even like, I'm just at the third trimester. And I've been trying to do my little lunch break walks like my doctor said I should do. And I do 2 laps, which is like just under a mile. And I'm like dead. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I'm just walking at like a slow pace. And I'm like, my back hurts. My fucking legs hurt. I can't breathe. But I'm trying to do my little walks. And then I come home and I'm like, you know what I want? Toasted marshmallows. That's like... That's the only like random craving I've had, which honestly isn't even that random for me because like I love a toasted marshmallow. So then I'll come home and I'll make 4 little toasted marshmallows in my toaster oven and eat them. And I'm like, this is not what my doctor wants. But I have cut down on fast food significantly. I've only had it like
I feel like 4 marshmallows twice. Is a, just a little treat. It's nothing horrible.
It's only 100 calories for 4 marshmallows. So I'm like, oh, it's not that bad. I've only had fast food like twice since my last appointment a month ago, which was like a big change for me. I'm trying to eat my salads, trying to be healthy. But it's hard because some days I feel good and I'm like, okay, good. I ate pretty healthy today. And then like the last 24 hours, I've felt ravenous. I like if I'm not eating, I'm just thinking about eating and what I can eat next. Everything. So I don't know if it's like a baby's having a growth spurt. That's very hard. My appointment's next week. And I'm like, bitch, just hold out. Be healthy for a few more days for your weigh-in. Because I don't want to get in trouble. And I don't remember what I said it on, but I'm only talking about getting in trouble because my doctor, between my last 2 appointments, said, like, I had a bit of, like, a weight spike. So just try to, like, keep it in check a little. So that's why I'm, like, freaking out about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't really be
worried about it.
This obsessed with it. Yeah. Like, I know, obviously, I'm pregnant. I'm going to gain weight. But I don't want to gain too much weight where my doctor's like, girl, what are you doing? So we'll see how it goes at my appointment on, I think it's on Wednesday. So, oh, when this comes out, I'll already know if I'm in trouble or not. So
you'll have to get updated.
So let me know if you want to know. What's going on with you?
Well, it was my birthday yesterday. It is my birthday there today, 29th of May.
Yeah,
is today
is your American birthday.
30th, yeah. So I get to celebrate, I guess, for 2 days, kind of. But yeah, no, it was nice. Just had a nice quiet day. Yeah, not really too much happening. Got a pretty quiet weekend. I feel like our life is ruled at the moment by my daughter's dance competition. She's got one in Sydney tomorrow, which is fun. so I'm a real dance mom. But anyway, no, it's good. Yeah, just pretty quiet.
Dance mom.
Dance mom. Yeah. I think I've mentioned before one exciting thing is that next year she and her dance school have been picked to dance at Disneyland. So we will be taking them over to do that. So we've just started booking all our flights and all that. So that's exciting, something to look forward to anyway, eventually.
Yeah. Another thing that's crazy, before I get into it, by the time this comes out, it'll be my like second wedding anniversary just passed it. So it's been 2 years since you were here, which is crazy.
And even crazier, like it's going to be June by the time this comes out. So just, weird.
Yeah.
Time is a weird concept. Do you want me to do these 2 listeners of the week really quickly?
Oh, yes, because I'll forget otherwise.
So we today, as I mentioned, we get the majority of our Spotify comments right after the episode is launched. So that is like this morning I got up and I read them all. There were some really, really nice ones. There was one that made me laugh and I just wanted to mention it. Now I've lost it again. Oh, no, here it is. so we mentioned how now that people can interact with each other in the Spotify comments. So you can discuss. And last week someone stood up for us on the timestamp thing. Abdul wrote today, which made me laugh, I'm here to fight with the haters, lol, I love the podcast. So I thought that was funny
because in the last episode I said feel free to go fight with the haters in the comments. We encourage it.
I actually tried to go on yesterday because I like it's released at midnight your time, which is now currently with the time zones 2 p.m my time, so I thought I'm gonna go on there. I'm gonna try and be proactive and write in the Spotify comments, hey guys, you know, just a reminder that you can check timestamps, but you can't do that. I can only reply. So I did try to investigate that yesterday just to kind of preempt everyone because we did have.
So we need you guys to comment and go on there first comment and say, check the timestamps.
And just to keep the listener of the week going, we had a message from Paulina today. I think it was today. This podcast is my comfort podcast. Love to listen to it when I clean, nap, work, and shower. Much love from Mexico. Which I feel like people will be like, nap? Like, that is weird. But I listen to podcasts to fall asleep. And if I'm at, like, I always put my AirPods in and that's how I fall asleep. Even for a nap, I put a podcast in. I feel like for the podcast I listen to, I should be, like, a mega fan because I have to listen 100 times because I fall asleep.
They're like, this bitch is crazy.
Like, I must download, you know, and listen to it a million times to get through the whole thing because I listen to a bit, fall asleep, remember where I've listened to, go back, do it again. So
is it hard to find your spot though?
I usually, to be honest, like, it doesn't usually take me that long to fall asleep. So I usually just start from the start and then I listen properly when I'm in the car or something and driving. But it's just, I don't know, I'm just in this habit now of listening to podcasts to fall asleep. I don't know what it is. I don't know, maybe it's a bit creepy. But I understand when Paulina said she listens to Nap, I'm like, me too, mate.
Before we get into it, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack sponsor. IQBar is the better-for-you plant protein-based snacks made with brain-boosting nutrients to refuel, nourish, and satisfy hunger without the sugar crash. IQBar's plant protein bars are packed with high-quality ingredients to keep you physically and mentally fit, and they're totally free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners for a natural anytime snack.
With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are starting their days on the right foot with IQBar's brain and body-boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. When IQBar sent us their ultimate sampler pack, my favorite flavor at the moment is banana nut. I love it. It tastes a bit like a, you know, naughty little banana cake treat. It's absolutely delicious, moist. I love, and I've said before, I love just picking out a random flavor, seeing which one I'm having today. Some of the other delicious flavors, they have a mint choc chip, chocolate sea salt, and lemon blueberry. Whatever, like, I feel like some people like the chocolate ones, some people like the fruity ones. There's something for everyone in the IQ sampler pack. And right now, IQBar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQBar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, text CRIME to 64000. Text CRIME to 64000. That's CRIME to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Okay, anyways, let's get into it. We have an update that Olivia's going to talk more about because she knows about it more.
This is a case I feel like we covered. It happened in 2024. So I feel like we covered it pretty soon after it happened. So this case happened in July 2024. And it's about the death of baby Tana Rae Robluski.
Robluski.
She was the four-month-old baby who was left on a boat by her parents. And when they apparently got back on the – and it was in 120-degree weather.
Caused a lot of uproar online. Yeah.
When they got back on the boat, she was very unwell. She was like life flighted to hospital. She ended up passing away. There was a lot of discussion about if the parents should be charged with neglect because the baby was on this boat. I even looked at her autopsy again the other day just to refresh my memory. They were on the boat from 10 a.m. until at least 5 p.m. It was a 120-degree day. And in it, it says that the baby had just been fed and they put her like under a shady area in the boat with a fan pointed towards her and they got in the water. It says for a brief period of time. I don't think we'll ever know how long she was actually alone for. Their story is a brief period of time. But basically there's been an investigation going on that whole entire time and the Mojave County Attorney's Office have now apparently declined to press any charges against the parents. They said criminal charges are declined due to insufficient evidence to support conviction at trial due to issues involving the cause of death. He said that three separate pathologists determined that Tana's death was not heat-related. I looked on the Maricopa County Medical Examiner's website yesterday. The baby is still on there as passing away from heat-related causes, but apparently these other pathologists have said that the baby died from like kind of asphyxiation after she spat up milk, like she choked on her milk, which again, like, is that not, I don't know, I guess things happen with babies, like even when they're sleeping, I know things happen with babies. It's just there's still a
was
lot
she
of discussion
in, like, a bouncer type, like a seat?
Yeah, I think she was in a seat. I did take a seat.
Because, you know, in all of my – I thought there was too. In all of my baby classes I've been taking lately, they say that when they're that little, you actually shouldn't leave them in them sleeping for too long or in, like, a car seat because they don't have the strength to, like, lift their neck properly and they can kind of just choke themselves on their own neck, basically, like, because they can't lift their head, so they just sit in that awkward position and can't really breathe.
The autopsy, I've got the screenshot here again. It doesn't actually say a seat. I always kind of thought it was a seat or something like that, but it says around 5 o'clock, the child is put down for a nap shortly after breastfeeding with damp clothing covering her body beneath a covered section of the boat with a fan blowing in her direction. The parents reportedly enter the water for a brief period of time and return to find her unresponsive. So it doesn't really say how she was positioned.
Exactly how she was sitting.
Yeah, this is what it says. Dr. John Hiseroot concluded that the infant choked on regurgitated milk. So that was the terminology that they used. There is a lot of discussion because the dad is a law, like the dad of Tanner is or was, I'm assuming he still is, a law enforcement officer. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with the update. I don't know. It's just a whole other
minefield. I think the argument is probably like if the baby choked on milk in the house or in their crib.
Yeah. Would like it yeah
wouldn't would necessarily no, be a know. Crime,
but then also that the Maricopa medical examiner, who is the primary person who conducted the autopsy, they are still saying the baby died from heat related causes. So
yeah, like did the baby throw up because of the heat?
Yeah,
guess there's not really a way to prove.
The other thing that apparently, and I haven't been able to confirm this, but we've posted about this, and some people have posted that apparently the mother is heavily pregnant, may have possibly given birth by now. So that's not even a year after the, like, I'm, you know, obviously people grieve differently. I'm not shaming them for having another baby, but it's just, you know, that's the update to the story as well, is that yeah, they are having another baby.
Interesting. So yeah, that still has the internet in an uproar. We'll have chat about that one.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if I think expected that outcome. I don't know if I'm totally shocked by it either. I guess it is one of those things where it's such a gray area. And even the terminology about they're not prosecuting due to insufficient evidence to support conviction at trial. So it's not necessarily like saying
a lot of it is.
Yeah, they don't, like, maybe they could bring charges, but it probably, due to this being such a gray area, wouldn't be successful at trial.
Yeah, I didn't ever actually think they'd really go to jail. I kind of just thought everyone was going to move on and forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's that, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Okay, so for this episode, we're going to be talking about three separate cases, but it's kind of like two stories in a way.
Yeah.
Where women have been found deceased under strange circumstances. And it's left a lot of people on the internet questioning how their deaths actually occurred. I said that they kind of were Ellen Greenberg-esque, where no matter what the ruling is by the coroner or whoever, by police, everybody is like,
I feel like there's always, in all three cases, there's so many questions. So no matter what the police or the authorities say, there's always going to be people who question if it was the actual correct ruling or the correct outcome for the case. It also kind of, I know you said Ellen Greenberg, reminds me a little bit of Micah Miller, who we also did, and her death was suicide. Many people don't believe that. So, yeah, it's just always going to be discussion, I think, in all three cases about if the right outcome occurred following the deaths of these women.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to talk about is Caitlin Walsh Tracy, who was 36. She was found pulverized and missing a foot in the stairwell of her partner's condo on October 27th, 2024. She'd apparently fallen 20 floors to her death. Caitlin's husband is a tax attorney named Adam Beckering, who's 46 years old, and he's been charged with domestic violence in the past against Caitlin. He's been charged with assaulting police officers, and some of the domestic violence situations between them seem pretty horrific. So obviously, she's found pulverized at the bottom of a lot of stairs in his condo, and a lot of people are suspicious of him. But yeah, he has not been charged at all in any relation to her death as of right now, just to make that clear.
And just also to clarify, the use of the word pulverized does not come from us. It comes from media reports. And I believe the family have also used it. Caitlin's family have also possibly used it as a term. So that is not our term. That is the way that her body has actually been described in the media.
Yeah, and like I know in the report, I think.
Yeah. And it says too, we said she fell at least 20 floors. Some reports say she fell up to 27 floors. Obviously, no one really knows what happened, which we'll get into.
A lot of floors.
Yeah, she fell from a very high distance, apparently.
Yeah.
It's been 3 weeks since Andrew and Monica Tracy's daughter, Caitlin, was found dead at the bottom of a South Loop high-rise condo stairwell. Instead of burying Caitlin, the Tracys have spent their time waging a legal battle with Caitlin's husband over her remains. The 36-year-old lived in Michigan. Last Friday, a Berrien County judge awarded Caitlin's parents custody of their daughter's body. She was released from the Cook County Medical Examiner and is now at a funeral home. But the court fight did not end last week.
We will continue to fight until Caitlin is laid to rest, surrounded by family who loved and supported her.
The Tracys and their attorneys returned to court in Chicago today because Caitlin's husband refused to give up. Adam Beckerink filed a motion with a Cook County judge asking for a delay.
We're not sure what the defendant is trying to accomplish with these filings. We can't imagine why he would want to keep Caitlin away from her family even now.
Beckerink and Caitlin were only married for 6 months. Court documents show a documented history of physical and mental abuse allegations by Caitlin against Beckerink, including an incident that sent Caitlin to the hospital. Beckerink, a tax attorney, faces felony charges for alleged abuse and was expected in court 2 days after Caitlin was found dead in his condo building. She fell 24 floors. Chicago police say her death remains an open death investigation.
All right, so we will start with some background into the people involved. Caitlin was born on May 29th, 1988, and today is May 29th for me.
Yeah, that's actually crazy. I didn't realize that we'd be recording on her birthday.
Oh, you didn't do it on purpose?
No, I didn't.
Her parents are Monica and Andrew, and she had an older sister named Carly. Her family has said that she was a vibrant and bold force of nature, that she had a sassy attitude and infectious energy. As a child, she attended Our Lady of Sorrows grade school and Mercy High School, both in Farmington Hills, Michigan. She became a Spartan, attending Michigan State University, where she graduated in 3 years with a business degree in hospitality management. After she graduated, she moved to Chicago and lived next to her sister, Carly. She loved cooking and traveling, as well as fashion and design. Caitlin chose to work in the field of data analytics and was working in the role of chief people officer. During the pandemic, she moved to a small town called New Buffalo in Michigan. In terms of Adam's background, there's a lot online about his career. Seems like he was a pretty successful,
high-profile tax attorney. Yeah.
So this article from 2016 gives you a little bit of insight about his career. Clearly, this is from 2016, so I can only imagine he had done even more since then. So the article says that he rejoined Baker and McKenzie as counsel in Chicago on November 1st after working at Reed Smith, strengthening the state and local tax capabilities of Baker and McKenzie's North American tax practice. Beckerink assists businesses and individuals on a broad range of state tax planning and dispute resolution matters, including audit, litigation, and appellate practice in matters such as state False Claims Act tax, this is so many words, tax defense, state tax refund class action defense, individual residency, telecommunications, excise tax, and sales and income tax. He regularly advises multinational enterprises on multi-state tax planning and tax aspects of mergers and acquisitions, and he has resolved complex state tax matters before administrative appeals boards, tax tribunals, and state courts across the U.S. He began his legal career at the U.S. Tax Court as an attorney advisor to Special Trial Judge Stanley Goldberg and served as an associate at Baker & McKenzie from 2006 to 2008. In his 10 years of practice, he has written several articles on tax law and has lent his talents to pro bono matters, including representing veterans before the Department of Veterans Affairs. Oh my God, that was so much.
Yeah, so it sounds like obviously we know now that he's not the nicest person, but he had a very established career prior to this.
Yeah, and I don't even know what any of that means, but it sounds important. Adam and Caitlin began dating in October 2022. Caitlin was previously married, and she met Adam because he lived in the same apartment complex in Chicago where she was living with her ex. The honeymoon period didn't last long, and a year after they met, Caitlin was granted an emergency protective order in Cook County against Adam. She submitted an affidavit detailing multiple occasions of physical and verbal abuse. Caitlin's parents alleged that Adam manipulated and purposefully isolated her from her family so that he could continue his campaign of abuse and terror unnoticed. Records said that Caitlin had told them in September 2023 that Adam had held her hostage and physically brutalized her to the point where she required medical attention. In October 2023, in court documents, Caitlin outlined three instances of abuse by Adam. She said that on July 11, 2023, around 3 p.m., Adam stripped her naked and attacked her. And the quote from the petition is, "He physically abused me by throwing a pickle jar, which struck me on my head, punching me, pushing me, pulling my hair, dragging me by my clothes, and stripping me of my clothes. He also poured vodka on my body, which burned my wounds, and would motion as if he was going to hit me with the alcohol bottle." Caitlin said she managed to escape on foot and that Adam later took her to the hospital for treatment for her open head wound. In a second alleged incident on August 21st, 2023, Caitlin spoke about an argument that she had with Adam. They fought around 8 in the morning, and Caitlin alleged that he verbally abused her by calling her a cheater, a whore, a piece of shit, liar, and a bitch before escalating to physical assault. The document says, "Physically abused me by dragging me by my ankle, strangling me, suffocating me, slamming my head against a cabinet, slapping me, punching me, putting my head in a headlock, and dragging me away from the door to prevent me from leaving. He then allegedly stole her keys, wallet, iPad, and phone to prevent her from leaving or seeking help." Caitlin said she escaped again by fleeing on foot, this time to the nearest police station. Police went to Adam's apartment, and he refused to open the door. The third incident happened at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Chicago on September 20th, 2023. Caitlin said that Adam stormed into her room around 5:30 p.m. before hurling abuse at her, and this time attempting to sexually abuse her. She did not give context about why she was at the hotel or go into detail about the sexual abuse, but she filed a police report for domestic battery. Her parents said it was around this time that Caitlin temporarily ended her relationship with Adam and opened up to them about the alleged violence. She also said he'd been trying to contact her approximately 20 times a day, either demanding to see her or to verbally abuse her over the phone. Caitlin stated in the order, "I believe if Adam knew I was here trying to get an emergency protective order, he would try to stop me or I would be at risk of further abuse." Despite this, in November 2023, Caitlin moved to vacate the order. Her parents alleged in court filings it was due to Adam threatening to sue her for defamation and libel. On January 13, 2024, Adam was charged by the Berrien County Prosecutor's Office with four counts of larceny, interference with electronic communications, and domestic violence against Caitlin. Caitlin's family and friends have said they do not know when the couple got back together, but on April 8th, 2024, they were married. None of Caitlin's relatives went to the wedding, so.
Yeah.
Seems like a typical domestic violence.
Controlling situation, like isolating her from her friends and family. To be fair, I haven't seen any wedding photos like that indicate there was a big wedding. Maybe it was just those two. But either way, her family didn't go to the wedding, which indicates that there was some probably reasoning for
that. Seems like they didn't really even know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like they probably – like they knew about the abuse, so they may not have been supportive of the wedding, which is totally understandable. So it just seems like it was a sad and isolating time for Caitlin probably too. You know, what should have been one of the happiest times doesn't sound like it really was.
Yeah, it just makes you wonder if he kind of like pressured her into it or what, just like signing a document. So Caitlin was close to one of her neighbors in New Buffalo named Joyce Lance, and they communicated often.
Great personality, very friendly, funny, sarcastic, very comfortable in her own skin.
On a quiet street in the Michigan beach town of New Buffalo, neighbors say a vibrant young woman moved in during the pandemic.
Like a lot of people from Chicago came this way to get away from the city during that time.
Joyce Lance has lived on the block for more than a decade, while Bunny Coiner moved to the neighborhood about a year ago. Both of them say they got to know Caitlin Tracy, or CT as they called her, as a friendly and kind neighbor.
I would consider her a neighbor. I would consider her a friend. Someone that, you know, we would always say hello to. They came to, you know, graduation parties at our house.
Very bubbly, very personable. Again, you know, just willing to talk and chat and say, hey, we should have a glass of wine together sometime. And she knew a lot of the neighbors. She would visit with the neighbors. She would walk down to the lake.
They also say Caitlin, at separate times, gave them a tour of her home.
It was beautifully decorated. You could tell that she loved to cook and she loved wines and walked us through some of the things that were in her kitchen. And so I guess my first impression of her was that I was duly impressed.
But now the house is quiet. A rug that her neighbors say she washed late in the summer still hangs over the second floor balcony. They tell us it was one of the last weekends Caitlin spent at the home.
You can't go buy that house without feeling sick to your stomach that she's no longer here.
Joyce said that she noticed some cryptic texts and some strange occurrences. On August 19th, 2024, Joyce said that there were five or six police cars outside of Caitlin's house. Adam was arrested that night for domestic violence, interfering with a 911 call, and resisting and assaulting police officers. Joyce saw Adam being removed from the house in handcuffs, and she texted Caitlin to ask if she should come over. And Joyce, this is a quote from her, she said yes, which surprised me, honestly, because, you know, I felt like she was a pretty independent woman that just handled things on her own. And when I got down there, I walked up the steps to her home, to her front door. I went to hug her. She felt so small and tiny and honestly frail, almost like a shell of what she used to be. Caitlin and Joyce spoke for hours that night, and Joyce tried to convince her to leave the abusive relationship. Caitlin told Joyce and another friend that she wanted to start her life over again here in Michigan and turn that corner.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
So just a clarity note, Adam lived in the condo apartment still, so it seems like that Caitlin kept the New Buffalo home even after they got married, and that's where she was living. So Caitlin asked Joyce for recommendations in the area of places to get her hair and nails done, and also asked her for details of a divorce attorney. A few days after this, Caitlin went back to Chicago. Joyce said that she assumed Caitlin was going to tie up loose ends. Joyce only saw Caitlin one more time prior to her death. She was with Adam and told Joyce that she was there for his court date. He had a case conference in Michigan scheduled on September 23rd, 2024. On Sunday, October 27, 2024, a resident of Adam's condo complex reported to the building manager that they had found a severed foot in the stairwell. Sad note, imagine just like finding a foot.
I know. And like, just as some like context, this is a beautiful kind of luxurious condo complex. It's called, I believe from what I've seen, it's called The Grant. It says luxury condominiums, 54 floors, 298 units. It says The Grant offers distinctive luxury living with its inspired architecture and design, coveted location, captivating views, superior service, and world-class amenities. So indoor pool, fitness center, entertainment suite, children's playroom, screening room, dog city pet care facility.
Very ritzy.
Yeah, very ritzy. So obviously, like, I can't even imagine finding a foot at the best of times, but this is a place, like a very high-end complex, so it would have been totally shocking.
The manager called police, and they arrived on scene at 7:20 p.m. that night. And Caitlin's body was found at the bottom of a stairwell. Authorities told the family that based on the condition of the remains, they determined that Caitlin's body fell approximately 24 floors. Her parents were told that based on the height of the fall, their daughter's body was pulverized and her foot was severed from her body. But, like, was the foot not with her body?
I don't know. Well, I don't think,
like,
so.
I feel like that's, it doesn't sound like it. They're like, it's in the hallway.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it was, because they reported finding the severed foot. They didn't report finding the body. So
I wonder if, not to be too graphic, she's falling, maybe hit like a railing.
Yeah, and I feel like falling down from, let's just say, 24 floors, if it hits a railing, that railing could act like a knife. Like,
yeah,
you know, they always say, like, you know, this is not, I know it's not the same kind of analogy, but if you jump off a cruise ship, hitting the water is like hitting concrete. Just the force from that height, I think, would be enough to sever the foot. I don't, like, I know there's a lot of questions. People think it's kind of like more nefarious than what it is. Like, was her foot cut off prior? I feel like the foot absolutely could have been severed during the fall.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. But I was just going to say also, that's what adds kind of more of the mystery.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
unresolved feeling to this case just because that seems very strange. But I guess if you think about it, it's possible.
Yeah.
So the Chicago police told the media at the time an unidentified adult female was found unresponsive at the bottom of the stairs at a residence at the above location. She was pronounced on scene. Detectives are conducting a death investigation and the autopsy results are pending. No one is in custody and there are no updates at this time as the investigation is ongoing. So at some point prior to her body being found, Adam had filed a missing person report for Caitlin. He was questioned by police at the time, but was released without charge. His attorney would later say he had nothing to do with his wife's death and he will continue to appear in court and will continue to speak through our filings in court on his behalf.
I've tried to find more information about this missing person report because I want to know, like, when he last saw her, why did he report her missing? Do you know what I mean? But there's just obviously he's been very closed about all of this. He doesn't want to say anything possibly incriminating or, you know, like he's obviously exercising his right to remain silent. So there's just not a whole lot of information about that part of the case, which I would be interested to learn more.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too. After Caitlin's death, her parents battled with Adam for custody of her body. On November 6th, they filed court documents outlining the alleged abuse that Caitlin suffered. Her parents also said in the petition that police officers said at the time of Caitlin's death that Adam was the primary suspect. Judge Brian Berger ruled that her remains would be released to them rather than to Adam. So, thank God. The Tracy's family's attorneys, Mitt Drew and Andrew Cuniff, released statements on behalf celebrating the judge's decision. They said, "We are incredibly grateful for Judge Berger's expedited decision. The ruling allows Caitlin's family not only to honor her life with the final service she deserves, but also to grieve appropriately, supporting them in their journey through this difficult time. Today's ruling in Michigan is a critical step in the family's efforts to protect and preserve Caitlin's legacy. The family will continue to fight for Caitlin until she's laid to rest with the respect and dignity she deserves."
Does remind me a little bit of the Molly Martins and Jason Corbett one where she tried to have his body very quickly cremated so that before his family could get there. So it
cover
does.
Up anything.
Yeah. Like if, yeah, it's a little bit suspicious.
Yeah. So Caitlin was buried in a Catholic funeral organized by her parents on November 23rd, 2024. There's no mention of Adam in her obituary. At the time of Caitlin's death, Adam was a partner at Duane Morris, a Chicago law firm. His employer said that Adam was swiftly removed once they found out about the abuse allegations. The firm said, "This is a shocking and tragic case, and we send our deepest condolences to the family and friends of Caitlin Tracy. Our firm was not aware of the domestic violence and other allegations against Adam Beckering, against Adam Beckering, asserted in various legal proceedings until recent media accounts of her death. Once we confirmed key facts, the partners board swiftly removed Adam as a partner of Duane Morris LLP, and he is no longer associated with our firm. Our deepest condolences go to Caitlin Tracy's family. Counseling will be available for the Chicago office employees this week. Out of respect for the legal process, it is not appropriate for the firm to speculate about the ongoing investigation, other than to say we hope justice will be served and we stand ready to assist if we can be helpful to investigators." The case has recently been in the media again as Caitlin's primary cause of death has been released. So the Cook County Medical Examiner has ruled Caitlin's death as being from a fall, but said that the manner of death remains undetermined, and she died of multiple injuries, fall from height.
If you aren't familiar with what manners of death are, the manner would be something like homicide, suicide, accident. So essentially, by them ruling it undetermined, they don't know why she fell.
So like, yes, she fell.
Yeah. But so was she pushed?
Don't know
why.
Did
she jump? Was it, you know, like, was it an accident? Yeah. That would be the three main obvious reasons why she would have fallen, but they are unable at this stage to rule why the fall happened.
Yes. So the latest update as of May 19th. So this is one of the last latest media reports from May 19th, it says it's unclear where his case in Michigan stands or whether the updated cause of death findings changed the investigation of the Chicago Police Department into Caitlin's death. The Chicago Police Department, the Berrien County Sheriff's Office in Michigan, and a spokesperson for Adam did not respond immediately to requests for comment. So that's really where the story is so far. Obviously, there's a lot of mystery and questions around this. I guess mystery still, but like we're all thinking the same thing.
Yeah. And like this case is a little bit different to the next two that we're going to discuss in that there is a documented criminal history of abuse against Caitlin by Adam. You know, obviously, like they weren't together a very long time. This all the abuse happened in a very short period of time. Like they weren't even married for a year before she passed away.
So it seemed like it was escalating rapidly and consistently.
Yeah. And even like it's not just one instance of abuse where they had a fight, for example, but she documented at least three in the petition that sound absolutely horrible. Like he poured vodka on her wounds and that type of thing. He, you know, stripped her naked. It seems like he isolated her.
Very demoralizing and demeaning. Yeah,
exactly. So I feel like this is a case where we may hear more if the investigation is ongoing. After she was found dead in October, it was kind of a lull in media attention and it just reopened again as the Cook County coroner did confirm that she died from the fall. So a lot of people are questioning how could this possibly happen? I don't know.
Like, I was thinking, you'd think like, an apartment building like this would have lots of cameras and stuff, or like was it so ritzy that they felt like they didn't need them in the halls and in the stairwells and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe they only had them in the main lobby area or entrances because it was such an upscale place that it seemed secure and safe because, I don't know, you just would think there'd be a camera or something somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. You would think. I'm assuming it was kind of in like maybe a fire escape stairwell where maybe, I don't know, there's less.
Or even one like, could it pick up sound, something?
Yeah. I do feel like this is definitely not a closed investigation. Maybe we'll hear something. And as I mentioned, I feel like the three scenarios are that she jumped, she accidentally fell somehow, or that he was involved. I feel like the least likely option is that she accidentally fell because that would be quite hard to do. I guess maybe she could have taken her own life, but based on the evidence that she gave previously, there could also be something more at play here.
And even if she did jump, that's what reminds me of Micah Miller, because like I would still blame him.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it sounds like this was a horrible situation. And if he was threatening to sue her at one point for defamation and libel, and that's why she dropped the...
He's scary and powerful.
Yeah. Rich. Yeah. He probably had every resource available to him. She sounds like she was isolated from her friends and family. She was just trying to either get out of the situation or minimize the situation. And who knows? And obviously, from the sounds of what she said, and we can only base what we know on her evidence, but it sounds like he was very rageful. He was very impulsive. He couldn't control his anger sometimes. So who knows if it was that type of scenario and they had a fight.
And if she really was trying to leave, like she'd kind of been hinting that she was, that's usually like the most dangerous time for women in domestic violence situations is when they're trying to leave if they get caught.
Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt it seems like he too, as we mentioned, was very successful in his corporate career. He was no doubt not used to being told no, not used to being in control. So if it was something along the lines of, well, I want a divorce, you know.
He's an attorney, technically. Yeah. Like, they're the worst people to friggin' argue with.
Could have snapped. I don't know. I feel like I really think we will probably hear more about this case as the investigation goes on.
Yeah, so again, to be clear, he's not charged with anything as of now, but
In relation to her death, he's been charged with domestic violence related things, but nothing in relation to her death yet.
Yeah, but we're all side-eyeing.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
So the next two cases we are going to discuss are a little bit different, and I really want to reiterate that the man we are going to discuss has not been charged with anything in relation to any abuse, violence, anything in relation to either of these women. The connection is that two women did pass away while they were dating the same man at separate times. So there's been a lot of eyebrows raised about how this could possibly happen. Two women in their 20s, how did they suddenly pass away when they were connected to the same man? But just to strongly reiterate, no charges have ever been laid against this guy in relation to anything in regards to these women.
It reminds me of, there was another case that we did an episode on where two women died that were dating the same guy, but he was noted to be like an abusive piece of shit. The argument was like that if she shot herself in the head or if he shot her.
Oh, yeah. I do know the one. And he was a fireman.
Yeah.
Let me look up his name.
Like fireman.
Sarah. Oh, yeah. So that was Sarah Sweeney.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was another one. Dr. Sarah Sweeney, she died of an overdose, and his wife was Grace Holland. So she died from the gunshot wound. So there was, that is a very similar case. I'd forgotten about that one.
But he was more documented as being abusive and horrible than this guy doesn't have anything really.
All right. So the first woman we are going to discuss is Bailey Schneider. Both of these cases happened in Melbourne in Australia. So Bailey was a 25-year-old woman. Bailey's social media accounts are both up. She's on, like, she's a beautiful woman. She's on tropical beaches. She's got all the photos with her friends. She seemed to have a very full social life. She was studying to become a clinical esthetician. This is her final Facebook post, which is from June 15th, 2018. So she did pass away in 2018. So this was right before she died. She posted an article, and this was the article, and then I'll read her caption. She said, "What does it mean to take responsibility for our safety? Dress differently, walk differently, talk to men in a certain way, message friends when we get home, walk with our keys in our hands because we already do these things and men continue to assault and murder us." And she wrote, "How about it's just not okay to assault and murder women? How are women supposed to come forward about rape or assault when police make comments like this and victim blame?"
Preach, girl.
Yeah. So one morning in June 2018, Bailey was spending a lazy day at home with her family. She had moved recently back in with her parents, Sabine and Cameron. They told her they were just going to the shops to get some groceries. After her parents left, Bailey poured a glass of wine and she smoked a cigarette. She was apparently upset about a fight that she'd had with her boyfriend, Anthony Hample. He is often referred to as Ant. So if you've seen that in the media, but she'd had a fight with him the night before, and he is the man that is related to both of the women. When her parents returned home after getting the groceries, they walked into the kitchen and they found Bailey slumped against the skirting boards, which are, I think you call them baseboards. Is that what you call
them?
Yeah. Yeah. On a cupboard in the corner, and she had a gold cord tied around her neck and she was dead. There was no obvious place in the kitchen that Bailey could have hanged herself from. She left no suicide note, and she had apparently taken out a life insurance policy on herself 3 weeks before she died. This is a 25-year-old. I probably didn't have life insurance at 25, but
I wouldn't even think about that.
Yeah, it all happened very quickly. They literally went to the shop. She was a little bit upset about the argument that she had with the boyfriend, and when they returned home, she was dead in the kitchen. The last few months of Bailey's life did seem quite tumultuous. She'd started working at strip clubs, and her parents had noticed that she'd seemed to be hiding more from them and becoming distant. 9 months before her death, she started dating Ant Hample, who was the man that we spoke about. He is described as a socialite. If you Google him, there's a whole bunch of information still online about him. He's quite well known in his circle, I guess. This is from a website about him. It says, "Who is Anthony Hample? Where has he come from? What inspires him as a marketer? And why is he rated as one of the nation's most esteemed and creative event planners?" And so then there's photos of him at these events, like he's with the Veronicas, who are an Australian sister duo. Goes into his life. It says, he has a role of celebrity clients, including Kylie Minogue, Lewis Hamilton, President Bill Clinton, Prince, and Nicole Kidman. He's worked with brands such as Porsche, W Hotels, Adidas, Ford, Disney, and the Australian Grand Prix. So he is still very successful in his career. As we mentioned, no charges ever been laid, but that is who she was apparently dating at the time. According to the Age newspaper, after Bailey's death, her mother Sabine contacted Ant. They had never met, as they'd only been dating for a few months. He had never met her family. He apparently gave her his condolences to the family, but he didn't attend Bailey's celebration of life service. In June 2020, so around 2 years after she died, the Victorian Deputy State Coroner ruled that Bailey's death was a suicide and was not suspicious. The homicide detective, acting Senior Sergeant Paul Rowe, said that they found that the cause of death was due to self-inflicted asphyxiation in the family home. Toxicology showed that Bailey had 3 times the legal driving alcohol limit and traces of cocaine in her bloodstream at the time of her death. Her parents found a half to three-quarter finish bottle of red wine when they found her body. According to the Sydney Morning Herald, Bailey's parents said that they were aware that she was involved in the Melbourne party scene and that she may have been struggling with drug and alcohol abuse. They did say, though, they thought she had her life back on track. She'd recently applied for a course in applied medical science at a university, and she'd moved back in with her parents for some stability. So all in all, that does seem like a pretty self-explanatory case. She was maybe upset. Yeah. She was intoxicated. You know, people making
made an impulsive decision, maybe.
Yeah. But as we mentioned, interestingly, Bailey is not the first partner of Ant Hample to pass away under strange circumstances. So this happened in 2018, Bailey's death, I mean. In December 2010, Ant's girlfriend, Phoebe Handsjuck, who was 24, was found dead in the garbage room of the luxury apartment complex where they lived. We know a little bit more about the dynamic and the relationship between Ant and Phoebe, as there's been a ton of media coverage. There was a really comprehensive coronial inquest into her death. There was also an entire podcast series called Phoebe's Fall. I think that came out in 2016, if you want to listen to it and do a real deep dive in this case. So the coronial inquest document, I think, is 87 pages. I've read the whole lot. What we tried to do was just try and pick up the main points. So if you really want to do a deep dive, I'll link the documents on the blog. It goes through all their movements in the days up to her death, the day, you know, phone records, all that type of stuff. So if you really want to do a deep dive, I recommend checking out those documents. And we have just picked the main points to tell the story today. So Ant and Phoebe first met in 2009. She was 23 and he was around 42. They started out as friends, apparently, and their relationship became intimate after 6 months. Their relationship was quite tumultuous with many ups and downs. Phoebe moved out of his apartment. She moved back in. She allegedly started drinking and had been taking prescription drugs. Ant said that she'd been hanging out with, quote, lowlifes and people he did not approve of. Their relationship did seem very volatile. Ant has said that Phoebe was struggling with her mental health. This is a direct quote from him taken from the coronial inquest. It says she struggled every day to do the simplest things. Sometimes she could not go to work or do basic chores. When it got too much, she would drink, and this is when I saw a complete personality change. She acted and spoke like someone I did not know at all and was very self-destructive. She was angry, irrational, agitated, and felt that she was worthless. Often this state would lead us to having an argument, or she would disappear for hours or sometimes a whole night and I would not know where she was. We always spoke about her struggle and ways to work on it together, and she was in most part committed to making herself feel better. I spoke with her family and found out that she had these problems for much of her life, and they indicated they were at a loss as what to do. So Phoebe did also keep a diary. Her notes were full of apparent dark thoughts when she was in a bad place. This is more quotes from the coronial inquest. It says, sometimes when she was drinking, she would cut herself, not seriously or dangerously, but more to draw blood and get a reaction. It was very up and down. We were very fond of each other. We were trying to battle her illness as well. When she wasn't drinking, which could be for weeks at a time, it was very good and great. But when she was drinking, it would become very strained. So Ant lived in this beautiful luxury apartment. They had an agreement where Phoebe would pay him $150 a week for rent, and he would pay for all travel expenses, and he would often give her money to buy clothes. They had booked a trip to Paris together, and they were due to leave on the 21st of December 2010. Phoebe had been working part-time as a receptionist, but her work attendance was said to be very inconsistent. Sometimes she would not go to work for days at a time. In terms of the agreed rental, $150 a week, Phoebe was often unable to pay it due to her spotty income. So the days leading up to her death are filled with some very strange occurrences. The details of what actually happened vary to whoever is asked. According to Ant, they argued about Phoebe's alcohol consumption, and she came and went from the apartment after their arguments. So she would kind of be there, she wouldn't be there. It's not like she was there all the time. As he said, sometimes she'd be gone for a day, he wouldn't know where she was. It was, seems like it was a very volatile time.
Yeah.
The night before her death, she sent a very strange text to many of her family and friends. This is it. This is the text. It says, "Hi, family. I am in bed and about to sleep. And when I wake, I will transform into the most incredible human being, B-E-I-N, you've ever seen. Not. I will go to hospital. It's safer there. And I hear their special tonight is tomato soup. Delicious, nutritious. I love you all very much, but not enough to send an individual text. Sorry about that, but time is sleep and I must be on my way. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. XO." So that's kind of a very unusual text to send, but she did send it the night before strange. She died. According to the coronial inquest, Phoebe was taking Lexapro and her dosage had been increased in September 2010, so around 2 months before she died. Anthony was apparently shocked to learn during the inquest that happened after her death that Phoebe would occasionally take his Stilnox sleeping tablets. On the morning of December 2, 2010, Aunt woke up and went to the gym around 8:15. So the night prior to that was when she'd sent the text. He got up, went to the gym. Phoebe's grandmother, Jeanette, was worried about the strange text she'd received the night before, and when she couldn't get hold of Phoebe, she contacted Aunt. He said he would swing by the apartment and check on Phoebe. We don't know if he actually did that. Doesn't sound like he did, because they have been able to verify his movements later through the use of electronic fobs to get in and out of the apartment.
He probably also thought, like, it seems like she might do stuff like this sometimes, yeah, to be
like
fair.
It doesn't seem like this was out of character for her. And, like, maybe
she was probably like yeah, she's just acting out.
And he spoke about how when she drank, she was a different person. So maybe he assumed she wasn't contactable because she was passed out or she was sleeping off a hangover or something along those lines. What we do know is that Aunt arrived home, I guess he went to work, and he arrived home at 6.05 p.m. that night. He took the lift to the 12th floor apartment. When he got in there, he noticed that Phoebe's bag and keys were on the bench, but there was no sign of her. He thought this was strange, as you need your keys to both exit and enter the apartment complex. So she couldn't have really gone anywhere.
How do you exit? Like, what do you mean you need to exit?
I don't know. Maybe you need to.
Like an inconvenience.
Unless, I don't know. That was his words. Maybe he means you need to lock the door. I don't know. Anyway, thought it was.
You want to lock it maybe on the way out? I don't know.
He thought it was weird because essentially she couldn't have really gone anywhere without the keys. He assumed Phoebe hadn't gone far and that she would return soon. Phoebe's father, Len, called Aunt, and basically Aunt told him the same thing, you know, said he would check in when Phoebe returned. He just assumed she was somewhere in the complex. According to crimereads.com, there are several post-it notes containing strange scribbles stuck to the kitchen counter. The cleaner had wiped the benches down the previous day, so the notes were new. They hadn't been there prior to that. Aunt went into the bedroom and found what he later called a shrine on the bed, which consisted of a photo of himself and Phoebe, a photo of her cat, and a whole lot of rambled notes. He said the notes she writes when she's smashed and they don't make a lot of sense. There were candles burning and Phoebe's hair straightener was on the floor plugged into a socket in the bathroom. So despite all this, Aunt called a local Chinese restaurant to order takeaway food. He only ordered enough food for one person. The delivery person arrived at around 8 p.m. When the delivery driver brought the food to Aunt, he asked what was going on in the building. He said, "The front of the building is swarming with cops. There's police cars and ambulance. I had to prop my bike up in the street. I hope your dinner isn't cold." So Aunt, at this point, I guess, started panicking. He took the lift to the lobby where he spoke to a police officer about what was going on. When he was told that a woman's body had been found in the rubbish room, Aunt said, "Oh no, my girlfriend is missing. Could it be her?" He was asked if Phoebe had any distinguishing features and he provided a recent photo of her. He described her tattoos and the police told him that the woman who they had found had those features as well. Aunt said, "My heart sank as I knew it was her." So this is another part that I took out from the coronial inquest. It says he gave a description of Phoebe and identified himself. On the instructions of police, he then went back upstairs. Soon after, a detective arrived and confirmed to him that the deceased was Phoebe. And then there's a quote, who I think is from Aunt. It says, "I believe that as a result of Phoebe's depression and alcohol abuse, she took her life tonight." So a very quick termination. So following an autopsy and toxicology testing, it was established that Phoebe had slid down the rubbish chute from the 12th floor to the ground. So like if you like, I think most people know this kind of room where most apartment complexes have a rubbish room. You go and you shove your rubbish down the chute and it goes down to the ground floor, wherever the rubbish room is. So she essentially got into this rubbish chute. Upon landing, the blade from the rubbish compactor had severed her ankle and she essentially bled to death. The toxicology report revealed that Phoebe had a blood alcohol reading of 0.16 and she had high levels of prescription drugs in her system. After her death, her psychiatrist handed down a report. He had seen Phoebe 15 times between June 2008 and December 2009. I'll just read out his determination because I think it's quite interesting and relates to the case. He said, Phoebe presented as an intelligent, likable, attractive young woman. I considered her to have the following issues: adjustment disorder with depression of moderate to severe degree. This disorder was manifest since the age of 13 to 14 when she went on a drinking binge with peers in school hours. At 15, she ran away from home, and after that, her parents could not control her. She described periods of depression and self-loathing, often following drinking binges during which she was vulnerable to compromising relationships. He also said that she had substance abuse, which was moderate alcohol abuse. Phoebe had been binge drinking since 14 or 15. He said at the time of seeing me initially, she had been sober for 7 days after a binge of vodka. Phoebe's behavior and sufferings were consistent with a diagnosis of the early stages of a borderline personality disorder, characterized by unstable, intense relationships, unstable identity, and impulsivity in regard to substance use and sexual relations. He also said that she had parent-child relation problems and that she had disrupted relationships with her parents from about age 8 and that she had partner relational problems and had a history of becoming involved with older men. Phoebe's psychologist, Joanna Young, also gave information about her treatment. She said that she'd seen Phoebe 26 times from February 2010 to the 29th of November 2010, which is kind of right in the few weeks before she passed away. And she said that she diagnosed Phoebe with major depressive disorder, severe but without psychotic features, social anxiety disorder with symptoms of generalized anxiety and alcohol abuse. She also diagnosed partner relational problems, elements of borderline personality disorder, and cocaine misuse and prescription drug misuse, which was sleeping pills. So both experts gave pretty similar opinions of their diagnosis in regards to Phoebe. They both were thinking along the same lines, it seems.
Yeah.
There is an excerpt from the coronial inquest, which is from the 30th of November, so 10 or so days before Phoebe passed away.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
Phoebe called her psychologist and said that she was extremely distressed about relationship issues and that she was drinking. She also said that she felt unsafe, as in suicidal, and felt alone and helpless. The psychologist said that she spoke with Phoebe for around half an hour, after which she was calmer but still suicidal. I asked her to stop drinking, but she would not agree to do so. The psychologist said, I had clients all afternoon and I could not take further calls from her, but I asked if there was someone who could stay with her or who she could go to, but she said there was not, and that she also did not want anyone to see her as she was. The psychologist said, I asked her to write down the phone numbers for crisis lines that she could call, a suicide helpline, lifeline, a direct line. She wrote them down, or she said she did, and agreed to call them and get herself to the Alfred Hospital if she continued to feel unsafe. She said, however, that she thought she would take some sleeping pills to sleep away the time and her pain, and I urged her to go to the hospital instead. So it does sound in the days and weeks before her death that she was struggling a lot, that she was in a very dark period. She was drinking, mixing it with sleeping pills. It does sound like it was a horrible time for Phoebe.
Mm-hmm.
So the coroner, Peter White, handed down his findings in 2014 and concluded that Phoebe's death was an accident. There was a lot of discussion, there still is to this day, about Phoebe, how Phoebe could have died in this way due to the size of the rubbish chute and how some injuries such as bruises and abrasions were sustained. So in the podcast, they go into a lot of detail about how her body could have fit in the chute. Like, these chutes are generally very narrow, very small, so you can't dump a whole bunch of rubbish in there at once. She would have had to kind of contort herself to get in there. So if you want to learn more about that, definitely check out the podcast. But the coroner concluded that under the influence of Stilnox and alcohol, Phoebe climbed into the garbage chute in a deeply confused and disoriented state, unaware of the danger to her life. I don't even know how to say all these things. So as we mentioned, they found the alcohol, they found the Stilnox. She also had quinine.
Zolpidem, duloxetine.
Yeah.
Dextromethorphan.
Yeah. So she had quite a lot of drugs in her system, which would have explained her kind of disoriented state and why she maybe got into the chute. It seems like a really bad storm of circumstances that led to her probably doing this.
Duloxetine, I'm pretty sure that's Cymbalta, anti-anxiety,
yeah,
depression medication.
And the other one is I always say it wrong, but basically that's a cough cold medication. So again,
Zolpidem is Ambien, so.
Ambien, I think, is also Stilnox, apparently, when I looked it up.
Yeah, so she's on Zolpidem, Ambien, and drinking, and on these other things.
And the other one is, it's called Robitussin, so it's like a cough medicine, which I know people do use for other purposes as well. But
that would definitely be disorienting.
Yeah. So they said that she sustained minor external injuries from the fall, but she died because of the severe injury to her leg, which was caused by the compactor on the ground floor. Dr. Matthew Lynch gave evidence at the inquest, and he said that he believed Phoebe died from exsanguination and that she likely died from her injury within 10 minutes of it occurring. So I know that basically what happened was she got out of the compactor and she kind of dragged herself in the rubbish room. There was blood everywhere. It was a horrible, horrible sight. She didn't die straight away. He kind of speculated within 3 to 4 minutes, but up to 10 minutes, that she likely would have essentially bled out from her injury. Mm. The coroner's finding ruled out suicide or the possibility of any third-party involvement. Coroner White made one other significant finding that was specifically requested by lawyers for Ant, that he be exonerated for any responsibility for Phoebe's death. So as we mentioned, after the inquest, the podcast Phoebe's Fall led to increased interest in the case again. Phoebe's mother, Natalie, had wanted to appeal the coroner's finding because they are very adamant that she likely didn't do this to herself, but they were advised against that by a barrister. They were advised that the Coroner's Act had such narrow appeal grounds that any challenge was likely to fail and could result in substantial costs being awarded by the family. Still to this day, there are repeated calls for the investigation into Phoebe's death to be reopened. The only practical way that would happen, though, is for there to be compelling new evidence or a witness who has not yet come forward. So this is what we were meaning when we were talking about, no matter what the kind of official ruling is, there will always, in these type of cases, going to be people who don't believe that the official ruling is the correct one. I do understand in Phoebe's case why, like, how could she actually fit herself into this chute, get down there? Why would she do that? But based on that combination of drugs and her mental health history, I feel like it's not out of the realm of possibility that she did do it to herself.
It makes you just looking in it for some reason and fell. Like, she might not be like, let me get on in here.
I feel like it's one of those things that you couldn't really fall. Like, she would have literally really had to jam herself in there. When you see photos of it, I'll put some photos on the blog if you want to check it out. It's not like something where you, like, you could, like, not the same scenario, but like look over a railing and, you know, overbalance and fall. It's not that type of thing. It's a very tight shoot. But yeah, it could, but in her disoriented mind, it could have been something like that. She could have been like, oh,
maybe she thought she like dropped something or.
Yeah. I'll need to go and get it. And she just wasn't thinking straight rather than going down to the rubbish room. She, I don't know, who knows. And there's, she was obviously struggling. She told her psychologist that she was suicidal. We don't know her state of mind on that night. I do think in Phoebe's case, it sounds like it was a horrible accident or a misadventure more so than anything. I don't think she probably meant to do it. She just didn't realize the, the outcome of what she was doing.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no like documented abuse allegations against Aunt, as far as we know, from like either woman or any relationships. Like, no one's come out and really said that about him. Seems like, if anything, he was attracted to a certain type of younger party girl that was in a vulnerable state and struggling with her mental health for whatever reason. I don't know if that makes him a dickhead or if he was trying to help them in a way, but just kind of seems like the two women that he dated were similar in a lot of ways when they're struggling with their mental health and abusing drugs and alcohol.
Yeah. And, you know,
especially because that was his job. Wasn't he like an event planner or socialite? So he probably like met them on the scene.
And also, like, essentially the only thing that he has done in this case is have a type. Like, both of the women were very similar in terms of they were attractive, they were young, they were both struggling with their mental health. I don't know if he had some type of preference for women who he could help.
Or just take advantage of in a certain way.
It could be. But I, you know, the coroner did agree that he should totally be exonerated in regards to Phoebe's death. They noted that in the inquest, as we mentioned, absolutely no charges have been filed against him. It's just that two women who he was dating at the time of their deaths both passed away in their 20s.
It seems
in
more
strange
like
circumstances.
Sugar baby-esque type relationships in a way.
Even the part about how he charged her $150 a week rent and he was going to take her to Paris. And
Like, what was the point of charging her $150? You're buying her clothes and the travel and everything.
Yeah. It's just almost like a token gesture. Yeah. I guess in the end, like, they were both fulfilling each other's needs. She needed someone to help her and kind of be responsible for her, because I'm talking about Phoebe now, because she was unable to work for periods of time. He was willing to support her, willing to give her a nice lifestyle, take her to Paris. And then it just so happened that it was at a very, very dark time for her. And that's why, you know, this incident occurred when they were dating together.
Yeah. I mean, 51-year-old socialite who dates vulnerable 20-year-old women screams douche, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's a murderer.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, the document is super comprehensive. It goes into like their phone records, their texts, the lead up, Phoebe's medical treatment. So if you want to read more about that, it's on the blog. Phoebe's Fall is a great podcast. It's a little bit older now, but it's still very, very relevant. The family do have a website for Phoebe, which I'll link on the blog. They haven't updated it for a while because I think now – obviously, I'm just speculating, but I feel like they're now at a point where they realize they've essentially done everything they can. They can't really go any further. Their avenues for appeal will be very costly, and they just, at some point, you need to start moving on with your life and coming to terms. Like, if she died in 2010, that's now 15 years ago, Nelly. So, there's a lot of documented history out there anyway, if you want to delve more into her case.
All right, so that is it for this episode. Definitely let us know what you guys think about these cases, because there's a lot to talk about. So let us know in the Spotify comments, where one of you is also going to leave a comment saying to tell people to use the timestamps. Remember, get on that, please.
Yeah.
But everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com, and plus all of the sources that Olivia just mentioned if you want to read more or learn more about Phoebe's death. You could check those out as well. Check us out on Patreon. We do weekly bonus episodes. We do all the episodes ad-free. Plus, we have some fun chats. We have like a little book club chat going on. lots of fun stuff over on Patreon. Plus, you'd be getting 2 episodes a week then, so that is awesome. Follow us on Instagram, True Crime Society. We're always posting updates there. And if you want to follow our personal accounts, mine's stephsum_Olivia's TCS Olivia. And while you're on Instagram, share the podcast to your story while you're listening, or like whatever you're doing while you're listening to the podcast. We love to reshare them and see what you guys are up to. And all the usual stuff. Rate, subscribe, follow, make sure you're doing all that. Spotify comments, etc., etc. So that is all. And then we, for the people who listen to the end, our little treat. I did actually Olivia's rundown of what's to come.
I did actually have a message from someone saying, "Are you going to speak about this case at the start of the podcast?" And I actually forgot. So next week, our plans, unless obviously I just every week I put the caveat, unless there's some other big breaking news, we are planning to maybe do some Australian cases, because people always message and say, do some more Aussie cases. So one of them, I think for Patreon, we may do the case of Lauren Flanagan. She's a mother from Queensland in Australia who allegedly in the last few weeks stabbed her 3-year-old to death. She made a bunch of social media posts in the lead up to that. So we will look into that one. And the other one I'm thinking of doing is about missing teenager Phoebe Bishop, another Phoebe, but she is missing in Queensland again, another Queensland case. She was apparently meant to go to the airport to catch a flight to see her boyfriend, and she never arrived. And she's got these shady flatmates. Even like there was this car, it was the most ridiculous thing. So they had a car of interest, they released the number plate, license plate, and then someone found the car and they've doctored it with tape. Like they even changed, I think it was a Hyundai car, they changed it to a Toyota with tape, and so they changed sketch. The letters. So like it looks like the shittiest, shoddiest job you've ever seen. So I am planning to probably look into that one next week.
So ridiculous. All right, so that is it. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.